We are in Athens, in a well-to-do suburb called Vrilisia. And I'm here with the founders of a new time bank in Vrilisia, and also with Luke. So why don't you introduce yourself, first of all, Luke?
My name's Luke Flegg. I've heard of you for a little while, but now we finally meet. I'm a filmmaker. I make promotional videos for charities, community projects, and nice things like that, and I'm also very interested in how human collaboration needs to evolve for a world that actually prospers.
That's exactly what we're talking about today.
Cool.
Michalis.
Okay, my name is Michalis Melis. I'm working on a volunteer, let's say, basis for municipality of Vrilisia. I'm dealing with this time bank.
Thank you. Maria.
Well, my name is Maria Bridzolaki. I am also a member of the Vrilisia Time Bank on a volunteer basis. And I'm also in the organizational team of the Festival for Solidarity and Cooperative Economy.
And can you tell us, Maria, why you decided to start a new time bank in Vrilisia?
Well, there was an initiative by the municipality to create a time bank in Vrilisia, and they had an open call for whoever in Vrilisia wanted to get involved in this time bank. So I saw this call and I wanted to participate in this project. The first time bank I've heard of was the time bank of Athens Square, Syntagma Square. And I believe it's a very good idea, so I wanted to participate in this project.
And if the Syntagma Square Time Bank covers all of Greece, sorry, all of Athens, why a time bank in Vrilisia?
Because Vrilisia is it's a place far away from the center of Athens, so it's not covered by the Athens Time Bank. The Athens Time Bank covers the center and areas close to the center of Athens.
Mm-hmm.
But Vrilisia is far away, and so it's not covered by that time bank.
I've noticed that in Vrilisia, it's a very strong middle-class area, and you wouldn't know that Greece was in crisis walking through the streets. Is this an area that needs a time bank?
Well, this is something that we have to see. We believe that there are people here that could use a time bank, maybe not all of the people. But even here, there are people that have been hit by the crisis, and it would be helpful for them to do things with dignity and not charity.
Can you tell us more about dignity and not charity?
Well, that's my personal opinion. What is charity? Like, charity is to give something, so you have your conscience feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really get involved with the person that you give charity to. You don't really know the person that you give the charity. And you do not want really to get involved with him or her. But solidarity, let's say, I think it's something that exists between two people, that they come in contact and they exchange. So it means it's a social thing. I don't think charity creates social communication or social contact.
Amen.
And what do you think anybody might be exchanged in the Vrilisia Time Bank?
Maybe Michalis can also help in this.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know because I have some ideas. Because my feeling is that maybe I'm wrong. That time banks are, let's say, more important in specific cases. For example, if you have communities that they miss some important skills or, let's say, competencies, then it is more easy to exchange these things. I mean, this is my initial idea, let's say. In an area like Vrilisia, for me is that, okay, maybe you can exchange services around, offer some help for adult people, or make some lessons, foreign language lessons, or make a company with some other people.
And so you're just
I'm saying that I'm not sure if there is a real, not a real need. I mean, people maybe would like to offer something and to receive some offers, because maybe they feel alone and they would like to communicate with other people and exchange services, for example, or also to make a relationship. It's a way to make a relationship, I would say.
And how do you plan to communicate with the local people to encourage them not only to join the time bank, but to do things within it?
This is very, let's say, very critical, because we tried making some small events and to promote the idea of the time bank in events. People create accounts in the bank, means that they would like to see what it is, but they do not offer, they do not exchange services. They want to see what it is and stay till there. Now they have to move to make the next step, to make offers, to ask for what they want, and then to start the real, let's say, the real job of the time bank. They are interested, they show interest, but they do not really participate yet.
So I've heard that the Time Bank has access to the City Council printing facilities. Are you planning to produce a leaflet or advertise through those channels?
We have already done that.
Mm-hmm.
We have already made a leaflet and a poster.
Mm-hmm.
And last week there was a fair in the center of Relisia.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a stand there, and we gave away a lot of leaflets speaking about the time bank.
Mm-hmm.
That is one thing. I don't think all of the people read leaflets, and I don't know if for all the people it's very clear what the time bank is just from a leaflet. I believe that we have to do like small gatherings of people and make presentations of the time bank.
Is that because, as Michaela said, people are coming to the website and they're not doing anything, and you would encourage them more in a small gathering?
Yes, I think that we haven't done enough yet to push them to be more active. We need to do more things. And Christina, another member of the team, had a suggestion that we, the members of the team, start doing exchanges between us. So this can be an example. So you, when someone goes into the time bank, he can see some movement, some activity in the time bank. Unfortunately, during the summer, it's not a very good period for a lot of new things. So we a little postpone things for September.
It's a good period, but not for the time bank.
I noticed that everyone in Greece is talking about going camping over the coming months.
Most of the people in Greece, they take their leave from work during the summer, especially middle July till end of August.
Mm-hmm.
And or even the companies, they don't do new things during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like go a little slow.
Or they close for 1 or 2 weeks.
Yes,
or
they even close.
Summer, they give the holiday days to the employees, and then they start again.
Also, the Syntagma Square Time Bank is running a big camp, a month-long,
yes,
in July, August.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand 40, 50 people come to that
mm-hmm.
over the
yes.
course of the month.
What is this?
The Athens Time Bank. Every year they do a big camp for the summer, free camping, for the members of the Time Bank,
mm-hmm.
which is a good way of meeting each other and socializing.
They cook together.
Cook together. But they play games.
They do it with no internet. So
no internet.
Whatever they're doing for each other, they can't put it into the website.
No, it's not in the...
You've seen these people already have a relationship, social relationship. Or maybe the time bank of...
No, the time bank was the beginning for them.
Help them to create a relationship.
I met them through there. And other people that are now team, they met through, as members of the time bank. They didn't know each other before the time bank.
And then it's an example of the time bank building community, but it's not visible in the statistics on the website.
Well, on the Athens time bank, as Christina told you, because there are a lot of other projects that they're working, and the assembly of the time bank is not very big, the time bank has not been a priority for some time. So that's why it slows down now. But it used to be very well. They did a lot of things in the beginning, and the thing was working on its own. But I think every now and then you have to give some more incentives to people to restart using.
I have created an account to this time bank, and during the last 3 months, I received 3 or 4 requests for a service, let's say, for assistance in specific areas.
From the Athens.
From the others.
So you did an exchange there?
I didn't register an offer, but I said that, okay, I'm an engineer, electrical engineer, so I received from them a request, okay, please come and fix my computer, let's say, for example.
And do you think there's much that can be learned by you, a new time bank, from other time banks or exchange networks in Greece or further afield?
Yes, I think we can learn, especially if we can find other municipality time banks like ours.
Do you know if they exist?
Well, I don't know if they exist, because there used to be some, but they were funded by EU money, and when money stopped coming in, the time bank stopped working. So I don't think they're very active now.
It's the same story in England.
Yes. So, but I think in one of the meetings of our team, I wasn't in that meeting, maybe you were, I think they came people from 2 other municipalities, and they wanted to hear what we are doing.
They came people interested in this, they would like to do something similar.
So it's been observed, not only by me, that some of the most successful time banks have a really dedicated person behind them who knows everything that's going on and everybody in the community. And from that point of view, a time bank needn't depend on outside funding. And if you can structure the time bank so that it will tick over by itself, then the outside funding can be a help, and then when it stops, everything doesn't die.
Well, our time bank doesn't have any funding. And we also have some rules on how it works. In order for the time bank, even if this mayor now in the next elections is not elected, the time bank will keep working. That will not be dependent on who is the mayor at every time. So we can make separate decisions. And also we don't get any funding, so we're not dependent on money.
There is an infrastructure behind the time bank. It means that there is a committee, there is a gathering of all the members of the bank, like the social infrastructure behind the bank. So this infrastructure is very important, because they have a relation between the members, they promote the bank, they promote some other activities. So it creates, let's say, an ecosystem.
A community.
With this. I don't know if the first priority is the bank, but it is a part of this ecosystem.
I wonder how ready people in Vrilisia, people in Greece, and people in countries struck by the crisis around the world, how ready they are to cooperate with each other. Sometimes it seems, working as we all are in the solidarity economy movement, that we are very few, and that many people are still looking to the money system and the economy to meet all of their needs, even when it isn't, and there's no sign of it recovering. What does it take to change people's minds, to switch from meeting all your needs through money and through the economy to looking to your neighbours?
My experience of LETS and time banking so far in the years that I've explored it, mainly in Bournemouth and Brighton, has been really fun. I've definitely felt like I've met neighbours, I've met people with disabilities living on their own, lonely people, I've met exciting, amazing, exuberant people, and you know, felt like I've really got a better sense of my community, and I felt valuable and lots of beautiful things. But one thing I haven't experienced is my main financial pressures, my rent, my utilities, transport, clothes, food, has never been really addressed through LETS or time banking, any sort of time exchange system. So my experience has been that time banks are more sort of, as a sort of alternative economy, the things that are available there are not my kind of expensive basic needs. They're more kind of social things, useful little extra things. You know, I can get some help with, you know, potentially quite a wide variety of skills. In the LETS scheme, I don't drive, so I've had really useful help with people who have a car really helping me out, and that's been great. But, you know, I wonder what kind of precedent it could set if there was, you know, those kind of costly basic living needs starting to be met by time banking somehow. You know, if you could get some landlord who was interested in just trying with one of their multiple properties, maybe, to kind of, you know, even at half price, let out, you know, a room or an apartment or something, and take time as at least a part payment for one of those. This is an experiment, you know.
It has happened.
That has happened. Okay.
So, occasionally, yeah. Somewhere in the world.
And I wonder how well it was covered. Like whether
I think
don't know.
The media coverage wasn't extensive.
Because I think sometimes there can be a great example of something working, and I have no idea if that did, or if there was different ways it could have been done to work better if it didn't work very well. But I think if there is a good example of something and it's not captured and shared in any way, it's hard for it to kind of actually set a precedent.
So my question was, how can we get people to lean more on the local community and the time bank? But that can also involve, how do we get people to do or to produce things of greater economic value that will actually save people money?
Well, for me, to get more people involved in cooperative economy is to have successful initiatives in your area. Like, if there is an initiative of cooperative economy that is sustainable and is working for a period of time, I think that's the best thing for somebody to follow. Because in Greece, we do not have a cooperative culture. We're not very good in cooperative between us. So it is something that we have to learn. And we have to learn how to speak when we are more than two or three.
What happens if you're more than two or three?
We all speak at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So... when I got involved with the festival, and we had assemblies, and my first connection was the festival that took place on October 2015, and I had no experience of assemblies. So when I first went to an assembly, I heard that, okay, we set the rules, who is going to be a coordinator, and how much each of us, you know, each one of us will speak. Nobody disturbs him while he speaks. We do a whole circle. And then we can have a dialogue or do something different. Which, for me, that living in Greece all this year, it was the first time that I've been in this kind of discussion, that there was respect for each other. We also use the kirikior. I don't know if you know that you hold something,
and talking for the stick.
Yes, for the time that you hold it, no one else talks. And I think we managed pretty good in our assemblies. But my previous experiences, even with company of friends, there were some people that would speak all of the time, and they wouldn't let the others speak. And it would be very difficult to find your place in the discussion.
So you're saying before we can learn to cooperate, we have to learn to speak?
Yes.
And to listen?
Yes. I believe I've never had before the non-violent communication. So that was the first also.
Mm-hmm.
That you can communicate with no violence.
Plus one.
Yes. So I believe it's the base. For me, it's the base. I have to learn first to communicate and then to cooperate.
Mm. So I've noticed other people in the solidarity economy around me, they appreciate the need for exchange and cooperation, but in their work they're focusing on communication.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get groups to listen to each other, understand each other, and come to meaningful decisions which they will then act upon? And there are methodologies to do that. And there are specialists who will help that to happen.
Yes.
So what's happening in the assemblies is just one possible methodology that became fashionable. But if you look into sociocracy or holocracy, can you think of any others?
Yeah, I mean, Art of Hosting, I think, have a whole toolkit of incredibly insightful, very enabling, not just like tools, that's a real reduction of what they're about, but going on a 3-day training with them, I felt way more equipped and inspired to host community conversations around a problem that we all want to tackle together in our community, or even just, you know, creatively address like a common vision that we want to bring to life. And conflicts can even be brought up constructively in there and stuff.
There's another system called Dragon Dreaming, in which the process is divided into four, where you dream together, then you plan what you're going to do together,
mm-hmm.
then you do it, and then you celebrate.
Uh-huh.
And then you go back to the beginning and make another dream, maybe focusing on some different people. So it's a cycle to encourage everyone to cooperate in bringing about everyone else's dreams.
Mm-hmm.
But when you use this process, or any process like this, I guess it encourages people to follow through with action, because that's so often a problem, that you can come to a decision and then no one does anything.
Yes.
But this is the way also that the companies work, you know.
Some of these, sociocracy,
for
example,
this kind of
people are bringing sociocracy into business.
In the business, yes.
There's this thing called Sociocracy 3.0, which is aimed at business meeting methodologies. And of course, all of these methodologies are supported to some extent by software, so that you can track the contents of the meetings and the outcomes, and then maybe email everybody with what they're supposed to be doing before the next meeting. So we shouldn't, it's not only, the social process can be supported by software,
mm-hmm.
only if it's really happening, of course. Software itself doesn't do anything.
It's the tool.
Yes.
To do something.
I'm wondering, Luke, if you can tell us about the thing you attended this week, because I think that's relevant.
I can try. It feels very young. It feels very emergent. It's not like a secret cult, but it's just, it sort of isn't a sort of specific vision that people have come together around. If I'm totally honest, about halfway into the week, it kind of fell apart a bit. And there was lots of questions around leadership and structures and what are we doing here and what's the purpose.
But that's super. What was it called?
It was called the IO Collective, which is a collective of people based around the concept of this IO, or imaginal organization. And the name comes from the analogy of the imaginal cells that move around the cocoon when a caterpillar is transforming into a butterfly, and it's what actually triggers that transformation. Mm-hmm. So the IO Collective is a group of people whose common vision is to go out into the world and to help to transform human collaboration and ways of working into into butterflies, which actually means more purposeful, fulfilling places to work with other people, intentional communities, schools, companies.
And when you say it fell apart, isn't that sometimes the best bit?
Yeah, I think so. So I think that was the point where, for me personally, this is very much my sort of experience of it. You know, there was a fork in the road there. We had 40 incredibly talented, successful in any way you want to measure them, people coming from consulting backgrounds, marketing, like finance, like activists, social innovators, all different kinds of.
Did they have any experience in collaboration?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why we were there. We had a common interest in, you know, it wasn't just like a networking event. People were trying to pass around business cards and get work. You know, we shared a vision and wanted to explore it together about, more purposeful ways of working more autonomously, you know, without being bossed around or delegated to. How can we work in more revolutionary, autonomous ways, respectfully, and drawing upon the insight of each other as much as possible without even necessarily having to agree on everything together, but certainly taking advice from each other and, you know, pulling out pieces of inspiration from teal organizations, this whole sort of teal movement that's come out of Frederick Laloux's work with reinventing organizations.
It's a spiral dynamics.
Yeah. And so there's someone there from Inspiral as well, which is a very effective implementation of a lot of these sort of ideas. They are mainly sort of tech, aren't they? They created Lumio and CoBudget, which is for a community, I mean, potentially even a municipality, theoretically. I'd be interested to know if it's been used for this, but I know it's used in many organizations. But people can democratically come up with ideas for how to spend a shared budget, and people inspire each other's ideas and vote on them. And so that budget process is not a kind of hierarchical role taken on by one person. And then Lumio is a tool to support, as you say, not create consensus decision making. I mean, this is a big thing that I feel like I've been learning the long and hard way, is that tools and apps don't create abilities in a group. They aren't going to turn a group of people who don't like each other or don't work together well into one that does, or, you know, a group of people who don't listen to each other or can't make decisions effectively into one that suddenly can. It's just going to potentially, at best, support something that's already happening. And just make it happen a bit more easily.
And do you think anything came out of the workshop that might be useful to the Verilicia Time Bank or to the Greek Solidarity Economy Movement?
Yeah, that's an interesting and specific question. A good few things happened there that I think are interesting and I think could be really valuable in various different groups, but it feels quite new and very early days for me to think about how what we're doing in that group could sort of be transposed into other groups at this stage. You know, so it was our first proper get together. Some of us had met before at a kind of dinner in London, where, you know, to sort of talk about the design of the retreat and stuff.
So there are people there who are committed to working together for the long term?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're already seeing in the few days since the event finished, there's definitely a buzz and people are following through with the conversations and pieces of work that we started. I was in a little action team that was working on the branding of the IO Collective, and that was quite interesting because there was a transition there between us saying on day one, they, without even consciously meaning it, when we talked about the IO Collective, like, you know, because why would we feel part of it yet? We just arrived on day one and it's something we're interested in, but it'd be weird to say we, you know, like, so what is that? What is that that turns us from saying they to we when we talk about communities, a time banking network, or firstly, we have to care about it enough to actually feel any emotional alignment to it. And then secondly, I think that the boundaries have to be quite clear. They can be transparent, they can be quite porous, but I think we have to have some kind of felt, visceral feeling that we've crossed over a threshold and we are now inside this network, inside this community. And I feel like ceremony in the broadest sense, well, I don't mean, you know, naked fire ceremony or something like that, just any kind of real human recognition of you are part of this community now is great. It doesn't have to be cultish or anything. It can be done in so many ways, like kind of buddying with someone who contacts you and you get a, usually it's just like an email or something, isn't it, with kind of primarily tech communities. And I think time banking is one that really, I think it's the face-to-face element that's so valuable and so needed in this ever more digital kind of world. How can we enable more of those real human connections and make you feel like you have actually joined a real living, breathing community based on tangible values?
Sometimes it seems to me that everyone is looking at the world's problems from their own particular perspective and coming up with their own particular solutions and then getting on with them. And then saying, well, why isn't everybody joining me? And what really works is when it happens the other way around, when you decide to work with somebody before you even have a specific agenda about what strategy you're going to use. Because when you approach it with an open mind, then it's much easier to focus on something other than your own ideas.
I agree with Luke that, okay, you may have a solution in your mind and you can put it on the table, but you have also to be open-minded, and maybe your solution will be improved with all the people, or another solution can be better.
So if you can make time to actually talk to the 150 communities who are known to be, 150 families who are known to be poor in Valencia, you might find that time banking is able to offer them something, but you might find there are other things.
Yes.
And it's important to keep an open mind about that, because the end goal is not to do time banking.
No. No. The end goal is to cooperate.
I think so, to create wealth together.
Yes.
Time banking is a great tool for that. But it hasn't really been proven in Greece.
No.
And there may be other tools which people are more comfortable with.
So you just see time banking as just a temporary transition catalyst from here to a new culture in communities.
I hope so.
Which doesn't need time banking because it's evolved beyond that.
It's a tool to help us change our way of thinking. And to look to each other and to value each other in terms of what we can do within the community. And everything we do within the community has a much greater human quality about it than those things we buy with money as well. So it's about enriching the quality of life. Okay, so that about wraps it up for this time, me visiting Valencia. So I'd like to thank everybody present for their participation.